you could be my evil stepmother any day, Bernadette.
For a movie that used gold spiral animation 5 seconds before that, like, could they not have put some magical glitter in post?
And they started to dance around this ballroom, and I'm like, I am crying.
It's just magical and romantic and sweet, and I love it. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Off to Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we're talking all about Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella. So this was kind of like, I guess, not a planned episode, but then obviously with the release of, let's call it, the Brandy Cinderella on Disney Plus in February, we had to talk about this movie because you and I have never seen it.
No, we haven't seen it. It's something that I've heard so much about, it being really influential on people watching it when they were young and making them love theater and making them be excited for theater. But it was just something I'd never seen. It came out in 1997, and we were quite young in 1997. So I don't know when we would have watched it. But to get to watch it now and to have it so easily accessible is really exciting.
Yeah, it's also a movie that I feel like everyone that we both follow on TikTok, or not TikTok, on Twitter is obsessed with.
Yes.
So when we heard that this was coming out and then obviously saw all of the following tweets, we were like, we need to do this as well.
Someone who I always am following, she's a former writer for BuzzFeed, and now she writes on TV. Her name is Alana Bennett, and everything she loves content-wise, I always end up loving. And so when she was tweeting about the Brandy Cinderella, I was like, I must see the Brandy Cinderella.
Yes. And obviously, in honor of Cinderella, we are in our best blues today.
Yes. So the blue eyeshadow is happening today. Okay.
The tiara is present.
Yes. I think, really, this tiara, it was a gift for my 16th birthday, and it's maybe one of my most worn wardrobe pieces ever.
I mean, it's made several appearances on this podcast, so
always a time to be a princess.
And especially now is a great time to be a princess. But in terms of Cinderella as a whole, I do think, obviously, the Cinderella that we are most familiar with is the Disney animated 1950s Cinderella. I feel like in terms of a Disney princess, she's the most recognizable out of every other one.
She is the iconic. The blue dress is iconic. The blonde, like, bun with the black, like, choker.
Yeah.
Stunning, gorgeous. It is, when you think of Disney princess, I really think everyone thinks Cinderella.
I mean, the Disney castle in Florida is Cinderella's castle. Right. Not everywhere, because think
they're
different.
Sleeping Beauty's castle.
Yeah, but she's definitely the most iconic princess. And then obviously this Cinderella is a Rodgers and Hammerstein. I mean, I think all of these are based off of old books, right? Like, all fairy tales are based off of super old books.
Is Cinderella a Grimm's fairy tale? I don't know. I think maybe.
You're asking the wrong person, but I can also find that. Hold on. Let's see. Because Broadway World put out an article that was like a breakdown of all of the Cinderellas. So it looks like it says ancient inspiration. The story that we know today as Cinderella originated from an ancient folktale. So
it's just, Cinderella has always existed, I guess. The idea of a woman getting to live out her dreams and meet the love of her life, but circumstances conspire to keep her away, and then but eventually she gets her happy ending. The villains get their comeuppance. It's a pretty classic basic story.
Yes. And in terms of this Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella, let's go through a bit of the history before we talk about this movie. So the first version of this musical was made for TV starring Julie Andrews in 1957. Obviously, we did not see this when it came out.
I've never seen it either. Available on Amazon Prime is the 1965 version starring Leslie Ann Warren. It's around the same length. It's not very long. And I remember when the Broadway version was premiering, I told my mom about it, and she said, oh, I used to watch that on TV with my mom, with my nonna. Mm-hmm. And so they knew all the music. Like, my nonna, who is, you know, born in Italy, over 80 years old, like, knows in my own little corner, knows Impossible, like, knows those songs from it being on TV in the 60s and airing over and over again and being like theater that was accessible,
yeah,
you know, 50 plus years ago.
It's interesting to me, though, because I have seen the Broadway Cinderella. I saw it in 2013 with Santino Fontana and Laura Osnes.
Yes.
And did get
wow,
this.
Wow, a signed program.
Can we just talk about Santino's signature being like the prettiest signature I've ever seen?
It's quite beautiful. Speaking of an Italian man, Santino Fontana.
So I did see that, and then I did also see it on tour when it came to Mirvish. I don't know what year. It was a few years later. But it had, like, a decently successful run on Broadway, almost 2 years. It had, like, a handful of Tony nominations. And
multiple replacement casts. Like,
yes.
Multiple people came in and played Cinderella.
Including Canada's own Carly Rae Jepsen.
You're right, Canada's own Carly Rae. I'm thinking, like, I think as a direct correlation to this version, Kiki Palmer went in and played Cinderella,
yes,
and was the first Black woman to play Cinderella on stage, mm-hmm, after Brandy was the first Black woman to play Cinderella on television.
So when Cinderella, the Brandy version, came out, as Steph said, 1997, it was also a television event, and it was viewed, I want to say, like, by 63 million people. I'm pretty sure I read that on, what did you say it was? The Wonderful World of Disney? That's
it was. Yeah, it was a Wonderful World of Disney. They relaunched Wonderful World of Disney in 1997 with this original made-for-TV musical movie. I was reading it had, like, the biggest budget of a made-for-TV movie ever at $12 million.
Wow.
The set, like, I mean, you can see the budget, I feel. Like, the sets, the costumes, the cast. You see the money that they spent.
That cast. Let's talk about the cast.
The cast.
Because, obviously, we have Brandy as Cinderella. And we also have Whitney Houston as the fairy godmother, which is just legendary.
Whitney Houston is a legend. Whitney Houston is my favorite singer ever. I love her so much. I miss her every day.
Yeah, like, and she also executive produced this movie, so, and she was the one that handpicked Brandy for the role. And
right, she was supposed to play Cinderella, right? And then kind of by the time it got around to doing it, she had aged out of the part a little bit.
And I also do think that it is due to Whitney that we do have this multicultural, diverse version of Cinderella, because she, as I said, she had handpicked Brandy for this role, and when you do that for such a main character, you're setting up the whole movie. Now you can place all of these different people in all of the other surrounding roles and make it what you want. And today, looking at this movie in 2021 and seeing that this had such a diverse cast back in 1997, I think that this movie was, like, super ahead of its time.
This movie is a definition of color blind casting. You know, we talk about color conscious casting, and I think an example of that is, like, obviously Hamilton, where you take the races of the actors playing the characters, and it's done on purpose to emphasize a point, make a point, emphasize the themes of the show. This is truly just, we cast people who we loved for these parts. There was a moment where I'm watching this and I'm like, this man is going to try this shoe on white people, isn't he? Like, they're truly colorblind. Like,
yeah,
we're
it's
just
true. Like,
pretending it's not there.
It was. And I think that's also, and that's something that I think comes up a lot in talking about Broadway casting in general in today, and obviously with the Black Lives Matter movement so present in 2020, and looking at Broadway as a whole and realizing that things need to change. Something like a Cinderella that is totally a fantastical, magical world. Why can't anybody play Cinderella? Like, it really does not matter. So the fact that this stance was taken all of those years ago is amazing. And I think that that's why that this movie is so special to so many people.
I am truly obsessed with Paolo Montalban's Prince, and his parents are Whoopi Goldberg and Victor Garber. And it's just not addressed. We just don't need to discuss it. It's just like, these are his parents. This is their son. Like, get over it. Accept it.
Let's just discuss that the queen and king of the kingdom are Whoopi Goldberg and Victor Garber.
I mean, they're my queen and king also, so.
And then we also just need to address the fact that V.N. Cox is in this movie, and we are obsessed with her from Indoor Boys, but to see her as, I don't even know what that stepsister's name was. Was it, like, Cantaloupe or something
The other one was named Minerva. I could not tell you what V.N. Cox's character's name was.
But she is the perfect dumb stepsister. She is so funny.
They were cracking me up. The stepsisters always crack me up. They were too cute. Just too cute.
And then we obviously also have, as evil stepmother, another iconic queen, Bernadette Peters.
You could be my evil stepmother any day, Bernadette. Like, so good. So
we need to shout out Ryan Bloomquist, who we've shouted out on many episodes because his tweets are legendary, but he, for all of us, clipped every single time Bernadette says Cinderella and put it into one video, and it's really funny.
I love it. She just is fantastic. I, like, can we talk about her song? The song that she sings, early, she sings the song Falling in Love with Love, which is, it was written by Richard Rodgers and Lorenz Hart for the musical The Boys from Syracuse. And I believe the original is slower, but they rearranged it, reorchestrated it, and made it a bit more upbeat for the stepmother to sing and have it be, like, warning her daughters, like, don't get too caught up in love. Like, marriage is for station, marriage is for money. And you, like, it gives the stepmother a backstory. It's like...
Yes.
And she nails it. Like, you have, you can't have Bernadette and have her not sing. And then they give her this, like, really fun, fun number. So I love it.
It is kind of interesting because I had not known that Cinderella was made up of different songs from other musicals. That was something that I learned yesterday reading about this show.
Well, they, like, what they wrote for the original version with Julie Andrews is what Rodgers and Hammerstein did, but then obviously Oscar Hammerstein passed away, and Richard Rodgers is also no longer with us, but so the, but the, as they've done more productions of Cinderella to extend it out even into a 2+ hour Broadway show, there just isn't enough music. So they went to the trunk songs of Rodgers and Hammerstein and pulled things from different musicals or cut songs from musicals to fill out the musical. The first song that Brandy and Paula Montalban sing, The Sweetest Sound, is from, I don't even know, from something else, was not written for Cinderella. And I don't think it's in any of the other versions.
No.
But it's like a good kind of like introductory song for this musical. The sweetest sounds I'll ever hear are still inside my head. The kindest words I'll ever know I'm waiting to be said. The most entrancing sight.
The movie obviously feels like a 1997 movie. That animation is everything.
Like, let's talk about it.
Yeah, so Whitney, obviously, fairy godmother, and in the musical version of Cinderella, at least the one on stage, also another iconic queen played fairy godmother, Vicky Clark. We love Vicky Clark. That outfit is kind of purpley and really beautiful, and Whitney's is straight up gold, and gold with, like, bejeweled
glam.
I don't even know, it's glam. That eye makeup was glam. She Amazing. Had glitter in her hair. It was everything. But also the magic that she's doing is gold, and it featured, like, gold spirals. I don't even know, it literally looks like, you know, if you go to Party City and you're looking in the confetti section and it's for the table, that's what it is. It's spiralized confetti that you throw on a table for an event.
It's just like magic, and it goes. And then the VFX that really cracked me up were when the pumpkin was transforming, and the pumpkin was just rolling around with, like, kind of sparkles around it, and then it got bigger, and I'm like, that cartoon pumpkin just...
Amazing.
So Whitney, obviously, we know her from her, like, pop recording career in the 80s, but what we don't... Like, what isn't as relevant is her producing career. Like, this was something that she produced that she was, like, she, you know, she had a young daughter at the time, and I think she, it was really important to her to have these, like, positive representations of women and of Black women specifically in media. And so this was something that I think, like, Whitney did for her daughter to show her the power. And there was something that she said, the fairy godmother said to Brandy at one point, you know, do you think the prince loved you for your nice smile and your pretty braids? And I was like, that moment really was like touching for me because, mm-hmm. Like to acknowledge that she was wearing her braids like that Brandy would normally wear, that they didn't kind of make her a traditionally looking princess, which is normally conforms to like white ideals and white standards, but they let her, or they styled her hair with the micro braids, and that was like, that was part of her beauty. I don't know. I thought that was a really powerful like moment for Whitney to, for the fairy godmother to acknowledge it and say that. And I think like Whitney's involvement in it is so important.
Well, it's also, so having this movie come out, obviously, on Disney Plus in 2021, I will say before this, this movie was not, you couldn't find it. It was very difficult to find it. Maybe you could find it on some streaming website. But
it was in the vault.
Yeah, it was not readily available to watch. So now that it's available for everybody to watch, it's, I mean, basically, Brandy is the first Black Disney princess because of the time that this movie came out. And it took 12 years for another Black princess to make its way onto a Disney film, and that's for Princess and the Frog and Tiana. And that's disappointing that it took that long. And I mean, I think that in terms of Disney diversity now is much better than it's been. You know, we have Moana and we have Coco and all of these different movies that are exploring different cultures. But in terms of princesses, it's still not what it should be. So the fact that this is now a movie that little girls can watch and hear a line like that said from a fairy godmother is really special.
It is really special. And princesses were something that were so, like, so white and so all looking the same. No matter how different they looked, they were all representing something of the same. And then, so to be, to show, you know, you can be a princess or you can be a princess or anyone can be a princess or be able to see yourself represented on the screen is wonderful. I mean, it also reminds me of when we had Brandon Antonio on almost 2 years ago now, and we were talking like, what was your first theatrical experience? And he said one of the first things he saw was this version of Cinderella and seeing a Filipino prince, seeing an Asian prince. He's like, oh, well, if he could be a prince, I can be a prince. I can do that. And it's, you really like, I don't know, for two people like us who've always kind of seen ourselves represented on screen, like, we don't know, or we can't possibly understand what it's like to see something, see yourself be represented for the first time.
Mm-hmm. And even for all of those years later, for that to still be such a huge moment in his life is obviously, that movie left a mark and will stay there forever. So again, I think that the fact that it is now fully readily accessible, I mean, you have to pay for a Disney Plus membership, but
that's just the structure now. That's just the streaming world, okay?
Yeah, but I will say the way that this movie was shot, if you watch it on TV, it's like square, and I don't think Disney Plus has widened the aspect ratio for that. So,
well, I like, it probably doesn't exist a wider aspect ratio, you know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, these things were filmed in the 90s. They didn't plan for them to be viewed 20 plus years later on people's giant flat screens.
That's true.
You know?
Yep.
It's like just for TV, the like the little square. TVs aren't even shaped like that anymore.
No, definitely not. But yeah, this movie and the music in it is, I mean, I love the music. When I saw this show on stage, I fell in love with it because it's just classic, and there's big, beautiful costumes, which is also in the movie. The costumes are amazing, and it has like big sets. And I think about the staircase because it's in both. It's in the musical and it's in the movie.
It's important. It's every version of Cinderella has a giant staircase. Even something like Into the Woods has that staircase.
Yes,
you know
exactly. And I just love that it was recreated for stage. And I was saying to you just before we started recording that first song, the prince is giving a ball, is, it takes place in two different scenes. And the first one is outside with all of the village people and all of the like fruit stands and everything.
So much amazing dancing in this in that song.
Yeah. And in on stage, it was exactly the same, like looked identical. So I really enjoyed seeing the difference in that, because it actually was more similar than I thought it would be. But in terms of the storyline, the story is slightly different. On Broadway, there are there's one character that is not in the film, and it's Jean-Michel, played by Greg Hildreth, who I love. And he and Gabriella, which is the stepsister that Vianne Cox played, fall in love and they sort of like try to overthrow the kingdom because there are obviously issues in the kingdom, and it's kind of like a different political story in a way that this movie is
a side plot.
Yeah, they try to overthrow the kingdom because of the way that the people are treated all around, and obviously because it's a fairy tale, they do, and everyone lives happily ever after. But I would be interested to watch. We did not watch the other versions that exist, but if there are differences in all of them, because it's just a small, minor plot line, but it makes it a more interesting show.
Well, the Broadway version was 2+ hours long, whereas these are both, the television ones, I think, are under 1.5 hours, all of them.
Yeah.
And all have different music and stuff. And I think for each different one, they wrote a new book to kind of modernize for each period. You know, the book from the 50s and 60s definitely changed so much to the 90s. And then, you know, 15+ years later, when it was on Broadway, the world had come even so much farther. And so the book was written to adapt that, because I think you can, with Cinderella, fall into kind of a bit of a dangerous storyline of just like helpless girl having everything done for her. But you want to give Cinderella agency. And I think with each new book and each script revision, they've tried to make Cinderella, and have made her, a more independent person who is capable of doing things on her own and is just in these horrible circumstances fighting her way out. And the further we come, the more independent Cinderella becomes in these versions.
I just think of all of the different iterations of Cinderella that there are, and I will go as far as say A Cinderella Story with Hilary Duff and Chad Michael Murray. That movie is, first of all, legendary. Second of all, it's great. And Hilary Duff does have that independence as this Cinderella character.
Yes, for sure. You know, you have the trope of the abusive stepmother and the mean stepsisters and the townspeople or the school bullies who are mean to her. But at the end of the day, you have a character who is strong, who is able to overcome that. And with every version, I think it's important to show, because, you know, a lot of what girls are watching when they're young is princess stories. And so you want to make sure that they're influenced by these positive role models before they grow up. There was even the 2015 live action Cinderella. We're getting new Cinderellas on stage and screen coming up. So it's a story that we are always going back to. So it's important to tell it in ways that is modern and that is like exciting and fun and fresh, but also has like a positive message.
I actually think that the most evolved version of Cinderella, we'll see, might be the new one that will be in the West End that Andrew Lloyd Webber is developing. Carrie Hope Fletcher is playing Cinderella, and the one song that has been released is called Bad Cinderella.
They call me a wretch, a witch, well, choose one. Every fairy tale for sure can use one. Sorry, I'm so rude. Sorry, you're so lame. I won't play your game. Call me Bad Cinderella, I take pride when you see her. I am proud that I'm not like you. I am Bad Cinderella, I face life.
And I just think that there might be more to this character than your average cleaning the floors and trying on glass slippers.
Well, just seeing the costume, like I've just seen some publicity stills of it, and also in the casting of Carrie Hope Fletcher, you know that she's not going to be down to play some like muted, like, you know,
she just came
quiet
off of
girl.
Doing Veronica in Heather's,
That's not her. That's not her personality, and they wouldn't cast her to do that. So they're looking for someone who is strong and is feisty and is spunky to play the Cinderella. So like, and I'm interested.
I actually think that the show might have been built around her casting, which is kind of cool. So yeah, I am interested as well. I mean, it is an ALW property, so we're going to expect some grand orchestrations, which.
Sure.
Let's give a good overture.
It's still a fairy tale. It's still a fairy tale, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of overtures, this is a great overture.
It's so good. I love how big it sounds. And I just remember when I saw it on Broadway, which, did I ever tell you who was sitting in the theater with me?
Definitely not. Tell me.
Wow. So I was in New York with my brothers, and I went alone to this because they went to a hockey game. Naturally. And all of a sudden, like, I had a, because I only had, like, one seat, this was a TKTS purchase, but it was at the Broadway Theater, and I got to sit pretty close. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, there were, like, two full rows that were, like, six rows back, center orchestra, dead center, but two full rows.
Wow. Like,
this is weird. Why did they just, like, save this? And it's literally, like, 5 minutes to curtain. And me thinking, well, why didn't I just get a ticket there? Like, I should have sat in the center instead of the side. Who walks in? Paul McCartney and his granddaughter. She was having a birthday party.
That's amazing.
At Cinderella. And they booked two rows for her and all of her friends.
That's
and it
so
was like
fun.
Him taking all of these girls, which is incredible, but also so random. But
that's amazing.
I feel like that might be the biggest celeb spotting I've ever had.
I don't know if you get bigger than a Beatle, to be honest. No. I don't know if you can ever get bigger than a Beatle. He's a celeb spotting.
Yeah. But yeah, he enjoyed it. He really did like
just
Cinderella.
Jamming out to the Rodgers and Hammerstein. Yeah. You know, I guess in the 60s, he was making music. This was coming out, you know.
Maybe he had seen one of the TV productions. You never know.
That's so funny. I feel like if I was rich, that would be my birthday party too. Just, you know, bringing like all my friends to a Broadway show.
Yes, it would be amazing. And they were young. They were super young, like maybe 10. So what a perfect show
that
to
is
take
a perfect
all
show.
Of your friends to.
I can't remember who, but I remember someone, also a celebrity, saying that they brought their daughter and her friends for their birthday to Mamma Mia. And I'm like, that's it.
That's a party.
The one. That is a birthday party. Yeah.
But so yeah, there are certain things with this Broadway production that are just so super fun. And the overture, amazing. But I will never forget, and it also lives on because it was at the Tony Awards, the amazing dress transformation that Laura Osnes does, Vicky Clark does. It's so exciting, and I don't quite know how it works. I think it's like a string situation, but it's all happening while she's spinning in a circle.
Is it the same costume change in the Broadway show than it was at the Tonys?
Yeah.
I always thought it was different for some reason.
There are two costume changes. There's one at the very beginning. No, she does do the whole like spin around, but the hair they did not do for the Tonys. That one is different. But then there's also when she comes back for the banquet and is wearing that gold dress, there's another transformation. Yeah.
I mean, it is pretty magical for her to just pull that string and the dress just descends.
Which I now thinking about it and thinking about that Elsa fail from California, I'm like, what if that ever happened? But the mechanics on Broadway are definitely different than a Disneyland
theme the Tonys,
show.
She had to pull twice to get it going.
That's
like,
true.
She does struggle a little bit. And it all went fine, but she did have to pull twice. I can't imagine how heavy that is on you.
But even Vicky Clark does an amazing dress transformation because she, like in most Disney movies, is kind of like a beggar woman and wearing a big cloak, and then she turns into the big fairy godmother. But when they were turning all of they had these animals that were basically puppets. It was like a puppet raccoon in a tree and like moving around. And then the actor that was playing the raccoon when he turns into a human for the coachman, like, throws the puppet, does, like, a somersault, and is, like, ready to go. It was really fun. I think that they really had a good tone to that show to make it great for adults, but also super fun for young kids. Because, I mean, it is Cinderella, and I don't know that a person that is just hoping to see an amazing Broadway show would choose Cinderella if they didn't feel that they wanted to see it.
Well, yeah, sometimes it's like there's not always that much very family friendly on Broadway or in theater. So it's like this is something that you can take anyone of any age to. Like, it suits literally everyone. Mm-hmm. And so you have to kind of cater to so many different audiences when you're doing that. It has to be smart, but also like visually fun. And I think like what they captured with that Broadway production is so good.
It's also one of those things that when you know that it's a fairy tale, you're expecting the magic and it better be up to the par, which is, I think,
deliver.
Like with, I'll compare it with Frozen, right? Like Frozen also should have been super magical. And I mean, the staircase in Cinderella versus the staircase or the non-existent staircase in Frozen, like we saw what they could have done. So I don't know why they didn't quite take the most magical approach that they could, especially being a Disney property. But now I'm thinking about it. I wonder why this wasn't like a Disney theatrical plus something else, because this movie, I mean, I guess the original is not a Disney property, But I feel like they could have kind of taken it under the Disney umbrella if they wanted to.
Yeah, I think it is an interesting question because I think it comes down to, like, licensing, right?
Yeah.
And I think for the 1987, it sounds like they licensed this production to make the movie of it for TV. And they have the television, maybe they have the television rights to it, but they don't necessarily have the theatrical rights to it. And then when the Rodgers and Hammerstein group is coming up to do this, it's like, do they need Disney? Do they not need Disney? Maybe Disney's uninterested. Like, they retain the control of this production of it, and they don't necessarily need Disney, like, for this. And I think also Disney is at a point where they'd rather be developing stuff in-house versus taking older stuff. If they're going to use something, if they're going to do a Cinderella for Broadway, they do based on their movie and not this Rodgers and Hammerstein version.
I think it's pretty confirmed that Cinderella under the Disney theatrical umbrella will never exist.
I don't think so either. Those original Disney movies, like the much older ones, think of like Snow White from the 30s, Cinderella from the 50s, are very short.
They're like, also not musicals, right?
Yes, there's like very little music to them. But they're very short. And so to build it out for stage is just, I don't know if it makes sense.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the songs, because I do think that there are enough songs in this movie and as well in the Broadway version that are comparable and we can talk about. So let's start with In My Own Little Corner. I really like this song. I really like the way that Brandy sings it and the version that they gave us. It was kind of more like poppy.
Yes, the orchestration's like, there's like a beat to it.
Yeah.
There's just like, ooh, it's production value. They like... It sounds like fresh. It sounded fresh and modern.
Yeah.
I am lost in the jungle all alone and unarmed when I meet a lioness in her lair. Then I'm glad to be back in my own little corner all alone. Yeah,
it's good. I really like that song, and I like the scene that goes with it. It's great. But I think the, like, showstopper in that act one, minus 10 minutes ago, which we'll talk about later, but the duo of It's Possible and Impossible. Mm-hmm. And there is an iconic video that's circulating on Twitter of Whitney and Brandy rehearsing Impossible, and Whitney is not happy with the way that Brandy is singing it. She wants her to sing it up an octave so that they sound good together. And she literally says to her, why are you down there? As in, like, why are you singing down there? You need to raise that up. And it's great. It's really good.
Whitney, nothing less than perfection for Whitney, okay? She knows what she wants, and she's going to tell you what she wants. Mm-hmm. Like, an icon to me, a legend. No one better. No one better than Whitney.
But yeah, this number is the magical number in the musical, for sure.
Yes, I do think it is just that, like, melody of, like, impossible. And then the way that they switch it to It's Possible later is, like, perfect. That's, like, the perfect wordplay. Yeah. It's, like, you know, this girl who's so, like, down on her luck, she thinks everything's impossible. But then one moment takes her, and now she feels like it's possible. And it's, like, I don't know. I just think it's, like, such mastery of, like, words.
Yeah, it's great. Moment.
It's possible, for the world is full of zanies and fools who don't believe in sensible rules and won't believe what sensible people say. And because these daft and do-it-I-don'ts keep building up impossible hopes, impossible things are happening every day.
I agree. It's a really strong song, and it's also one that it gets stuck in your head and you're always thinking about it. And I went in 2013 when I saw this. It was one of those songs that stood out. This was also a show that I feel like I immediately downloaded this cast recording, which I don't always do that with everything I see. Mm-hmm. I just, there's something about, and we've talked about this on other episodes, that yes, this is a modern musical, but taking a classical stance, it's just something that I don't see enough, and to see it in this way was very exciting to me.
I do think it was really exciting because it was new, but it was also old. Like, it was old music, but it had never been done on Broadway. It had never been staged on stage in such a grand way before. So it was new while also being classic at the same time. And it's very rare to find that. And also, there's so many, like, modern musicals with, like, more pop scores coming in, more pop influence scores. And this one is just very much not pop influenced, I don't think, at all.
No.
And obviously the orchestrations for this Brandy version, like, definitely have some pop orchestrations, but for the Broadway version, really not. I really don't feel at all.
No.
And I just feel like, unless we're going back to older cast recordings, we're not getting that as much feeling so fresh and new. So I think it felt fresh while also feeling classic.
Yeah, there's something that about those grand orchestrations that I love so much. So to get that, I agree, is great. Let's talk about 10 Minutes Ago. This is a song that we referenced in our Broadway Love Songs episode, but we did not really get into it. This scene in itself is so beautiful, and I love the song. And I think in every version now that I've seen, but also when you just hear like two random people sing it at a 54 below, it's just magical and romantic and sweet, and I love it.
In the arms of my love, I'm flying over mountain and
there's that, like, two notes that it starts with where it's like, I love 10 Minutes Ago. I was watching this and they started to dance around this ballroom and I'm like, I am crying. Like, this is emotional to me. There's something about dancing in a giant ball gown that really gets me. And we need to find an opportunity for me to dance in a giant ball gown somewhere. Okay, like, make it happen.
It's very also like Bridgerton now, right? Like,
I know.
Wow,
maybe
imagine.
Bridgerton is not giving me the giant ball gowns that I want, though, you know? I was reminded of, this is so random, but when I like saw The King and I when it was on tour here in Toronto, I was like, I do not care for this. Another Rodgers and Hammerstein. But when they started dancing with her giant skirt, I cried. I don't know what it was. I was like, I can't handle this.
But that's also kind of what I mean about like a classic show. We don't see that
ever.
You never see those big ballroom dance numbers. I think the most modern take on a big ballroom dance number is kind of Dancing Through Life when they do, you know what I mean?
Yes.
They're obviously not wearing big ball gowns. They're wearing the Aussian black and white outfits. But it is kind of the most recent, I feel, at least in what I've seen. I guess actually that's a lie. Anastasia has a big ballroom scene.
Right.
But that show also is fantastical, a fairy tale. But in terms of modern, I mean, Wicked also fantastical, basically a fairy tale. But that's like a modern take on a big dance number. But I agree, there is nothing like watching two people, like, the couple
in
spin
hold.
Around in a circle.
It's like, for some reason, it is like so romantic for them to be like in ballroom hold, just waltzing around the room. I can't handle it. There's like a tension. There is a love. I can't.
But it's interesting because in the movie, I was saying that everyone is wearing either a shade of blue or purple, which is a choice aesthetically.
Yeah, for like a visual moment.
Yeah, but on stage, everyone is wearing a different dress. So when you see everybody go into that big ballroom number, it's like a rainbow of colors. It's so stunning. And obviously, like, everyone's wearing jewels and the lights hit it in the right way. And it's beautiful. And it happens twice in Cinderella because there's also another song that we mentioned in our Broadway Love Songs is Do I Love You Because You're Beautiful, which that is a stunning song. And I mean, let's just talk about Santino Fontana for a second, because I feel like
Always.
He hasn't gotten the credit that he deserves on this podcast, because
we do love this man.
Yeah, like, Steph and I really love Santino, but we haven't really talked about a show that he's been in until now. And he was in his prime when Cinderella was on Broadway, because Frozen had just come out.
It was around the same time.
Yeah.
Like, 2013 was when it opened on Broadway, and 2013 was when Frozen came out. So,
yeah.
It's like, and literally the same year.
So I had watched, which was also the first time I think that I had watched the Broadway.com vlogs, the Princess Diary, which I feel like you've seen as well.
I've definitely seen them. There were so many episodes of them. What was the fish's name? Herman.
Herman.
Herman the fish.
Because that's one of his names. It's Christopher Rupert. Herman.
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 Yeah. The fish was definitely in it. And I feel like watching those vlogs before seeing the show, like, really made me fall in love with Santino, because then you see Prince Charming in real life. I think that he is an amazing singer. I really think that he's such an amazing singer, but I also think that he's a great actor, and I think that he was the perfect Topher in this musical.
He is a really good actor. He is a really good actor. I will speak on him in one of my favorite things ever, Submissions Only. Never forget Submissions Only. But his character is like the love interest for Kate Weatherhead's character. And, Kate Weatherhead's like not really that interested in him. And you're kind of like, oh, sure, whatever. His name is Aaron on that show. And then he like does an acting scene and the character starts to get a talent crush on him. And you as an audience are like, also get a talent crush on him. You're just like, why are you so good? Oh, this is so good. That's when I was like, this man is a fantastic actor. And that was around the same time as, like, Cinderella as well.
He also is the actor that has incredible chemistry with everybody that he's on stage with. So it's very easy to just be taken away by whatever he's doing on stage. And in this song, Do I Love You Because You're Beautiful, watching him spin around with Laura Osnes in this, like, stunning gold, basically Belle Beauty and the Beast dress, I was like, I love you.
The way he sings right at the end, like, are you?
He goes up.
Yeah, it's like, ah! It's like so powerful in that moment. It's fantastic.
Are you really as wonderful as you seem?
I love that song. I love, it's like, Do I Love You Because You're Beautiful? Or like, am I so in love with you that you are just, like, the most beautiful person to me? And he's like, I have no idea. Who cares?
And I love that they sing it, those same lyrics to each other. It's not just the prince saying this to Cinderella. Like, she says it back. There's something about this Broadway iteration, which I do think in the Brandy, it's kind of the same. But this Cinderella is more independent earlier in the show than other iterations of Cinderella.
Right.
And yeah, I really love that song, and I love that scene, and yeah.
I actually, this was one of my favorite moments of the Brandy Cinderella, because you got to hear Paola Montalban and Brandy sing together, and there was something about his, like, very theatrical, like, traditionally theatrical voice,
yes,
blending with her pop voice that I, like, thought was great. I think it, like, worked to serve communicating to the audience, this is like a prince who is high class, and this is a girl who is, you know, from a different part of the world. And then the combining of their voice in that moment, saying the same words, singing their love to each other, but like their voices being so different, like, communicated the difference in them. I don't know if that any of that makes sense, but I really, like, loved that they takes on singing, or the way that they sing, was so different, and I love the way that it blended together in that moment.
Are you the sweet invention of a lover's dream, or are you really as wonderful as you seem?
And also the gardens.
Yes, we love a garden scene. But I will say the placement of this song in the movie, which I'm aware the musical is almost an hour longer than the movie, but they literally just met and now he's singing this song to her.
I love
which
you. In when the he musical, got down on one knee, I was like, oh my God, is he proposing? They met 10 minutes ago.
Literally, as they just sung, they met 10 minutes ago.
And there, he's like on his knees. I'm like, oh my God, what is happening?
Yeah, but that song comes pretty late in Act Two, so it almost earns it in Act Two.
Right.
We also need to talk about, like, one of the most, we've said iconic a million times in this episode, but truly one of the most iconic actresses that was in Cinderella on Broadway, and that's Anne Harada as a
You're
stepsister.
Right. You're right.
And that song, Stepsister's Lament, which is, it's so funny. And I swear that there's a moment in the musical when she's singing this song that she just like sits on the ground, puts her hands on her dress, and just like crosses her arms and mopes. And I love Anne Harada, and she was such a great stepsister in the musical. And also, randomly, the stepmother, when I saw it on Broadway, was Harriet Harris, who I only know as Felicia Tillman from Desperate Housewives.
Amazing.
Super scary character. So to see her in this role kind of made sense.
Amazing. That's so funny.
But that was a character that was like stunt cast quite a bit throughout the run.
I can imagine. Didn't NeNe Leakes do it?
NeNe Leakes did it. Fran Drescher did it. It was a bunch of different people. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, doesn't seem that difficult. Not that it's not difficult, also, but it's not, like, vocally heavy, you know?
Well, yeah, because there's that Bernadette song is not in the musical, so the stepmother is just yelling,
At the end of the show, we got Whitney just singing, I don't even know what the song is called. What is it called, Tara?
There's Music in You.
There's Music in You.
It's in the Broadway version, which I think it's also in the 1960s, 50s version, but it is not sung the way that Whitney sang it.
No, Whitney is just like, and now I'm going to be me. Now I'm going to do Whitney. Okay, we're going to bring Whitney to this moment. I'm going to float above the rest of the cast as I sing this song. I feel like they combined like four songs for this because they did There's Music in You, and then there's another bridge they brought in, and then it's like Impossible / It's Possible.
They brought in the song that Cinderella and the Prince sang at the beginning of the movie.
Right, like a little bit of Sweetest Sound. It just combined a bunch of things, and they're like, Whitney, do you. And she's like, I'm going to do me. Okay, I'm going to sing this the way I sing. There is music in you. And you're just like, yes. But I don't think there's a cast recording from this. Because
there were label issues
like with Whitney and Brandy's label. So
if anyone listening to this knows and is from the States, let us know. Because it is on Spotify. It says Cinderella, Brandy, Whitney Houston, 1997. But for me, it's grayed out. And I don't know if that's a Canadian thing.
Geolocked?
Someone let us know if it's geolocked.
Is it just us?
But it's not on Apple Music because that's what I have, and it's definitely not there. And neither, the 1957 Julie Andrews is there.
Is it?
But the 65 is not.
No, I wonder if there's a cast recording. That was you can watch it on Amazon Prime. It's available. I started watching it.
I also wonder if these were even fully recorded for a cast recording setting or if they just like recorded it for the movie.
Probably not, honestly, because it is different things, you know, when you're recording something for a cast recording versus recording it for to then like lip sync. For a movie, they are very different things.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
So as we were saying, the costumes in this movie were stunning, except for the glass slipper.
This is the ugliest shoe I've ever seen in my life. Okay. It's got a weird, like it's very high on her foot.
Yeah. It almost looked like when, if you were trying to put your foot in, which also, if you watch the movie, watch Bernadette put her foot in the shoe because it's really funny. But it looked like it would, like, scrape your skin as you're trying
so
to get
in. It's so uncomfortable. Like, I can't imagine the logistics of a glass slipper in general, how comfortable that would be. And this is obviously not glass. It's, like, plastic or whatever. But it's so ugly. And then when they put it on Brandy's barefoot and you just see her whole foot through it.
Yeah.
I was like, this is horrible.
For a movie that used gold spiral animation 5 seconds before that, like, could they not have put some magical glitter in post?
Yeah, it's not, like, glass slipper, does that mean transparent? I always thought it meant it looked like
frosty.
Shiny, crystally, you know, and not just, like, flat glass. Like,
actually, hang on.
Beautiful. What do you have? What do you have? Show me, Tara. Show and tell.
So at Disney World, you can buy glass slippers and they have like your birthstone. So I have a glass slipper that has a little June birthstone here. But even this, like you can see, you can't see straight through it because it's like very shiny. It's not frosted, but you cannot see through it. So where was this shoe for Brandy?
Imagine Bernadette shoving her foot into that shoe.
This little shoe. One.
It's yeah. like Barbie shoe. Yeah, it was just ugly. And then when we had just had like a long shot of her just foot in the shoe, I was like, where the costumes in this were gorgeous. There's a moment early where Bernadette Peters has this giant like collar. Did you remember this? I was like, what is this? I love it.
When they came out and they were walking out of that hat store, Bernadette was wearing this jacket that had this, I think it was that, maybe that. It was almost like purpley and pink. I mean, Bernadette's outfits, I think were like
every outfit was iconic, yeah.
But the jacket, I was like, I think I need that.
Just like there's a giant collar. It was like off to the side. It was askew. I loved it.
Which was also something that I loved on stage was in that scene, which I think some of them are wearing in when all of the women are to dance with the prince. Mm-hmm. They're all wearing feathers in their hair, which is amazing. Yes. And it also just helps when you're spinning around. It adds more texture to like the costumes.
And float.
But yeah, like, I mean, they really leveled up on Broadway with that shoe because that glass slipper is stunning. I actually think it might be Louboutin, which is
you think
amazing.
It's Louboutin? You don't think it's like Stuart Weitzman or something like that?
Oh, it might be Stuart Weitzman.
I feel like it's Stuart Weitzman.
I do know that based off of interviews, Laura got to keep the shoes. And I think she was married before Cinderella, but if she wasn't, yeah. she should have worn those.
That's the wedding shoe. That's the wedding shoe. Something I love. So there were like a bunch of amazing choreography moments, particularly thinking of the like Jason Alexander number at the beginning. Yeah. Jason Alexander serving us physical comedy in this. And yes. then also the big ball scene. And it was Rob Marshall who choreographed this. And he's done so many things, but like most notably Chicago, which yeah. obviously won the Academy Award as a musical. So the choreography, beautiful. The way they used space, like yeah. really beautiful. He's a big movie director for mm-hmm. musicals, and he's really famous for directing Chicago, Nine, which is like meh, but you know, Into the Woods, Mary Poppins Returns. So he is great at translating musical numbers to screen,
yeah,
which is a different skill for sure than for stage.
I think didn't Craig Zaden work on this?
Yeah, it was a Neil Marin, Craig Zaden produced
yeah.
Production, which they do a lot of the live musicals for TV now. So, and they do like all the award shows and the Oscars. And by putting these musicals on television, the audience that they get is 100 times more than they could ever get on stage. Even shows running for years and years and years, like could never get the amount of people that this movie got its first night on television.
Yeah, and it is like it's a premiere one night only event basically mm-hmm. is what it is. So yeah, I mean I don't think Wonderful World of Disney. I mean it does still do movies now and again. The Greatest mm-hmm. Showman was one of them at Christmas time.
They just air Disney movies, you know, for the most part.
Yeah, but yeah, I would love to see like a theatrical event of a movie on TV again because that obviously doesn't exist.
The closest thing we got was The Little Mermaid Live to this.
That's true. Yeah.
Because that was Wonderful World of Disney, wasn't it?
Which was questionable.
That it happened.
Go listen to our episode on that.
There were some moments that were wonderful, including the dog.
Bagel.
Named Bagel.
And also, what's his name? Graham Phillips.
Graham Phillips and Bagel. Whenever they shared the screen, that was the high point of Little Mermaid Live. But yeah, I wish we would get more of that. And I understand like the budget for this movie was huge. And the budget to do something like that is much bigger than just taking something they made for theaters and then airing mm-hmm. it on TV. But it's exciting. It's exciting to have this and to think that this has had so much long-lasting impact that before it was on Disney Plus, people were campaigning for it to be on Disney yeah. Plus. And then when it was released, everyone was so excited. They just did like a reunion on yeah. EW to talk about it because of the like long-lasting impact this has had. And so I think like Disney has an opportunity to do more of that, and I wish they would.
I agree. And you should all watch The Brandy Cinderella on Disney Plus if you have not seen it. And with that being said, it is now time for our obsession of the week. Steph, what's your obsession this week?
Okay, my obsession this week. You know that I loved Bridgerton. And yeah. you know that my best boy for Bridgerton, Anthony Bridgerton, a.k.a. Jonathan Bailey. And I made a discovery recently that he was in the original West End cast of American Psycho. I did not know this. I don't know how I found this out, but I then went and listened to that cast recording.
Times. I know how you found this out, because since Bridgerton, you've only watched things and listened to things with Jonathan Bailey. Jonathan Bailey, if you were ever listening, like, we want to talk to you.
I love you so much.
We really want to talk to you about Company, but we'll also talk to you about Bridgerton.
I truly love this man so much. Okay. So he was in the original West End cast of American Psycho, which we know I am obsessed with the American bootleg. And because I am obsessed with the American bootleg, I never listened to the West End cast recording. It was Jonathan Bailey who made me do this. It's very good. It's really good.
It's what's his name from Doctor Who, right?
It's Matt Smith. So the song that is my obsession is called Killing Time, and it's a duet with Matt Smith and Jonathan Bailey. I can't remember Jonathan Bailey's character's name. He's one of his, like, co-workers. I don't know. It's Killing Time. It's this, like, really moody song. They're doing coke during it. I don't know. It's great. But they just sound so good. It's so moody. I, like, will put it on repeat, and I'm just, like... The way that cast recording is, like, 80s synth, it's so much fun. It's another Duncan Sheik moment. I love, like, a Duncan Sheik moment. So I just think it's a really great song. That cast recording is fantastic. I would also recommend You Are What You Wear. That was in the American version. I think it's really funny in the UK version as well. And then, you know, A Girl Before, fantastic. But my obsession currently is Matt Smith and Jonathan Bailey singing Killing Time.
Keep on going. You two will fall.
That this flopped musical has had so much airtime on this podcast. We've, like, revived it.
You know, my personal campaign, American Psycho. Here's the thing. Also, the problem with American Psycho is I feel like it's not one that's going to have regional success or, like, high school success. You know?
It can't have high school success. It cannot have high
It shouldn't.
School
it shouldn't. It's very inappropriate. So I just don't know if we'll really ever get to see it be done. You know what I mean?
Like, you and I? No.
No. You know what I mean? Like, it ran for not that long on the West End and not very long at all on Broadway. And I just cannot see an opportunity for it to come up at all. So I'm kind of devastated by that because I'm oddly really obsessed with it.
I do know that the West End version did not have a blood screen go up. So if you sat in those first few rows, you were in the splash zone.
The thing about the West End version is the opening number is different. And the opening number to the US one, like to the Broadway version, is so good. And they don't have it on the West End. But yeah, they, like in the UK, they're just a little more fast and loose with the blood and just everything, honestly.
So funny to me that you have, like, an American UK obsession, because so do I.
Wow. And go on.
This is also a flopped, failed musical, but I've been listening to Amelie, which,
why?
As you know, was, like, really, really not critically acclaimed in the
US. Speaking of my boyfriends, Adam Chandler Barrett.
Well, yes, and we'll talk about him in a second. But so this production was on Broadway based on the movie. I've never seen the movie. Have you seen the movie?
No, I've never seen the movie.
So Philippa Sue left Hamilton to do this, which was a choice. And it really did not play for very long on Broadway. It started in the UK, West End, with Samantha Barks. Then it came over to the US and Philippa Sue did it. And then most recently in 2019, I believe, there was a UK tour. And there was a cast recording that came out last year. Now, I've listened to both. There are some good songs on this cast recording. As a whole, I actually don't think that it's that great. And I don't think that the show is good. However, I've heard that the tour is really good because the UK, as you were saying, just, like, takes these different chances to do things really cool and interesting, and they really honed in on what the movie was famous for, which was the quirkiness and, like, the weird kind of grungy, super cool. They also did, which we love, when it transferred from the US to the UK, the actors were musicians on stage, and I read that really helped bring the story together and made it more cohesive. Now, on the US cast recording, Philippa Sue, as we know, has a stunning voice, like truly stunning voice. And also Adam Sandler Barrett, who we also love, has a stunning voice. But the UK cast recording is like quite different and super folksy and really interesting sounding. But if you, I'll put in our, for our YouTube listeners in the description, I'll put a trailer of both the US and the UK version of the show. But the UK version is just like cool. And I feel like I would see it and enjoy it. And the US version, I feel like I would see it and hate it. However, my obsession this week is from the U.S. version cast recording, and it's Adam Chandler Barrett singing Thin Air. This song is stunning with a capital S, and it's all due to him. His voice is so beautiful. I mean, we talked about him in our Broadway Love Songs episode. He is Henry, best guy, which we also just watched a TikTok video where someone else agreed that Henry is number one best guy.
Best boy.
And I just love the way that he sings this song. I cannot tell you what's happening because I do not really know the plot line of this musical slash movie, but his voice is everything. And this song kind of reminds me of Once. So
interesting.
I think that you might actually like some songs on the recording.
I have When the Booth Goes Bright on my...
That one's good,
that I've downloaded, which is also an Adam Chandler Barrett moment. I really like the tone of his voice so much. I like his placement. He has really beautiful placement.
He is such a good singer, which sounds so dumb to say, but he just is just like such a good singer, just an all around great singer. I also really
And there's
like
character to his voice. Like it's not basic. It's like interesting.
Yeah, there's a really interesting tone for sure. I also really like Times Are Hard for Dreamers, which is the theme basically for the US show, which is so interesting because that song appears very early in the US show, and in the UK 2019 version, they sing it like the second last song, and it's really not a part of the show at all. So they did make a lot of changes to the book and the orchestrations for sure, and also having the actors being musicians as well really changed the way that they staged the show. And yeah, I'd be interested to see that version because I'm really not interested in the US version. But this song, Thin Air, like listen to it and then listen to it again and then again because it's amazing.
Your footsteps fall silent as snow on the ground. And I may be hammered, but I can hear my heart pound and it's reaching out to you. Reaching out to you. So.
We both have flop musicals.
Flops. I mean,
Amelie was more of a flop than I think American Psycho was. I feel like it only ran for maybe like 20 performances.
American Psycho was a flop. In the West End, it was a limited run, but in the US, like in on Broadway, I think it was like 2 months, if that.
Yeah. I know that Amelie had like a pretty hefty preview period, and there were obviously issues when they did their out of towns as well, and they were like, well, let's take it and see what happens, and then close basically the next day. There's a really great Ben Brantley review on it that you should read.
I definitely should. Maybe I will. Yeah. I've been like trying to get into Amelie. There's just so much out there. But yeah, it's like, it's hard because I've heard that it's not bad, but like it wasn't successful. It didn't work. And so it's like, why would I spend time on it? But if you're telling me it's great.
I mean, I don't think as a whole the cast recording is great, but if you do pick and choose some of the good ones, yeah. And I mean, like, there are so many shows that I feel like the ones that we love, there are songs that we don't really care for, but there are moments that we are obsessed with. But yeah, just based on like the visuals that I've seen for the UK version, I do think that the show is completely different and probably, I mean, it was, when it came out, I think people really enjoyed it and it had really great reviews in the UK, and it was like a reimagined, which sometimes you just need to send your shows overseas to get reimagined.
I do think it's really interesting. I think it's a lot cheaper to produce a show over like in the UK than it is on Broadway. So I think they're more likely to take risks.
Well, someone was also saying
on Broadway, you have to do it perfect or more generic be more appealing to everyone, whereas in the UK it's not as expensive, you can kind of like do limited runs and not have to worry about like making back a huge capitalization. And I think that's a better model than what's going on over here.
Yeah, and just like speaking on the genericness of the US, it's totally true. And this is a French movie, and they basically took all of the French aspects out of Broadway. But when you have it in the UK and it's so close to France in general that you're probably getting people coming over from Paris or whatever to see this show, they had French accents, and they really kept some of the like most romantic parts of France in this musical. So I don't know. It's cool. I would really love the chance to see one day when we can travel again, one show on Broadway or a tour here in Canada, and then also see the same
in the West End.
Changed in the West End, because the only other time that I've been able to do that was Wicked, which, I mean, they have accents, which everything
it's
is better
than
accent.
It's the same production, though, here and
but
there, you know?
I did get to see also the original staging, which is now gone, of Les Mis, and that really is something to see. So it would be cool to see a show start in the UK and transfer over, or vice versa, and see it see it different, because
sometimes they do change
cool
them
stuff.
A lot between. Yes. Yeah. I feel like, on the contrary to American Psycho, Amelie is something that I can see being licensed, and I can see there being like regional productions of it.
Yes. Yes.
Because just,
it's appropriate.
Like, it's like very appropriate. Like high schools are going to be doing like Amelie.
Yeah.
Whereas they should not be doing American Psycho.
But it is interesting too, because with both of these shows, like I feel like there are some songs, and I'm sure there are a million other cast recordings we could also reference, but like if you're looking for audition songs, go through these cast recordings, because there are some like really amazing vocal moments in there that I feel like are missed. And people always do, you know,
probably
like
not
the big
overdone.
Songs. Yeah. People are always looking for not overdone audition songs, and I feel like Amelie might be the one to go to.
Go sing something from Amelie.
Yeah.
And also, sorry, speaking of Adam Chandler Brett, star of Gossip Girl.
Yes. I mean, we knew obviously when it was announced that Adam Chandler Brett, like we were like, this is amazing. He'll be great in Gossip Girl. Who's he gonna play? We still don't know who he's gonna play. But if anyone is questioning whether they should watch the new Gossip Girl reboot on HBO Max, you should, because he's in it.
Him and Tavi Gevinson, you know? We didn't get there Unworthy of Your Love, so now we're getting whatever. We're getting Gossip Girl.
Well, I mean, we were supposed to see them, right? In Assassin.
We were supposed to see their Unworthy of Your Love.
Yeah.
And
so,
now we're not.
Because we didn't get to see him last year, we've talked about him already twice this year. So you're welcome, everybody. And
welcome.
That wraps up our obsession of the week, and also Cinderella. And yeah, as I said, if you have seen this movie, haven't seen this movie, let us know. And you can let us know by following us on Twitter or Instagram at Off2BeAwayPodcast. That's with the number 2.
And you can subscribe to our podcast anywhere podcasts are found. And we would love it if you left us a review on Apple Podcasts, and if you could subscribe to us on YouTube.
And we will see you guys next time for our episode on Legally Blonde, the musical.
Bye.